Good morning. Blessings to each one here this morning. Welcome here. Welcome the visitors. Glad you're here. Certainly been inspired so far this morning with what has been shared and appreciate it. Speaking of color, he made every one of us sitting here different. Every person on the face of the earth has a different DNA. And he uses each one of us, or he wants to use each one of us in a different way for his purpose. That is a creator, creative God. This morning, for our thoughts, I thought I would continue in our Beatitudes stairway or ladder that we've been looking at, the stairway into the kingdom of heaven, as I called it, and the path of blessing that we are looking at in the first 12 verses of Matthew chapter 5. It's so familiar, and I read over it many, many times, and I've heard different messages on it, and it's amazing how when you study into it, there's just more and more there all the time. This path of blessing is also the straight gate and the narrow way that Christ is referring to later on in his sermon in Matthew chapter 7. I would just like to read those verses. Verses 13 and 14, enter ye in at the straight gate, for wide is the gate and broad is the way that leadeth to destruction, and many there be which go in thereat. Because straight is the gate, and narrow is the way which leadeth unto life, and few there be that find it. This path of blessing that Christ lays out here in his opening sermon is not the path of least resistance, where we unintentionally find ourselves one day. It requires a tremendous amount of effort to get on and to stay on. And I'd like to think about that as we go down through this. Nothing about this is easy, but there is tremendous blessing when we go there and be there. We'll read down through the first seven verses of Matthew chapter 5. It says, and seeing the multitudes, he went up into a mountain, and when he was set, his disciples came unto him, and he opened his mouth and taught them, saying, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are they that mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Blessed are they which do hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they shall be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. And we'll stop reading there. And just to, I like to go back over these verses because they all build on each other. And maybe we weren't all here for all of them, but we looked at the third verse, the poor in spirit, and I like to think of that as the gate, the straight gate, the difficult place of entry that we enter into this, on this journey, on this pathway to heaven. It is through death to self. The point that every person on the face of the earth has to deal with, whether they're going to enter there or not. Every person that makes it into the kingdom of heaven will have entered through that gate. There is no other way. And that is through poor in spirit, destitute of self, and a proper view of God and who he is. It is not easy where self-promotion and everything about self is glorified, but it is the only right way. Galatians 2:20, Paul says, I am crucified with Christ, nevertheless I live, yet not I, but Christ liveth in me. And the life which I now live in the flesh, I live by the faith of the Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me. Paul identified with death to self over and over again through his teaching. Then in verse 4, blessed are they that mourn, for they shall be comforted. After death to self, we realize where we're at. There comes a genuine sorrow for sin, a brokenness, and a contrite heart that David talked about way back. There is where we find acceptance and blessing from God. Once again, it is not popular whatsoever in the world we live in, where sin is glorified, where good is called evil and evil is called good, darkness is light and light is darkness, and bitter is sweet and sweet is bitter, like it says in Isaiah. But it is a part of this path of blessing we are on. Verse 5, blessed are the meek, like a well-broke horse, our strength and our spirit controlled by the Master, and only in that are we useful. In meekness we accept the hard things and the accusations of life. We do not stand up in defense of ourselves. That is what meekness is. Meekness is not cowering weakness. It is strength through Christ. Verse 6. There is emptiness in the first three. There is an emptiness of self. In verse 6, we long for fulfillment. There is a hunger and thirst after righteousness and the promise to be filled if we search. And we looked at the blessing that comes to the born-again believer through practical outworking and adherence to the teachings and example of Christ, hungering and thirsting for more of his righteousness and not our own, like the scribes and Pharisees. Now we come to the seventh verse, and Christ says, blessed are the merciful. And right off the bat, I'm going to say this is a massive topic. It goes the whole way through the Bible from beginning to end, and it was probably one of the toughest ones so far to try and pull stuff together and figure out which way I'm going to take it, because I can't even begin to do justice to it. But this topic of mercy, and in this context here that Christ is teaching, it has the thought of actively compassionate. And there's mercy that he gives and there's mercy that we extend, and we'll go into that. We'll look into that as we go down through here. And a while back I read a book, and I wasn't sure where I should bring this in, but it was really interesting. The title of it is Just Mercy. And in that book, it was a young attorney down in the U.S. called Brian Stevenson. He's the author as well. And he was representing people that were caught up in the criminal justice system that are incapable or unable to have a fair trial. And he stepped into their lives, and he took it upon himself to represent them. And this is just, I want to read just a little bit of what he says in the beginning of his book. He said, and this is just a young black man. He was just a young guy getting going. He said, my work with the poor and the incarcerated has persuaded me that the opposite of poverty is not wealth. The opposite of poverty is justice. Finally, I've come to believe that the true measure of our commitment to justice, the character of our society, our commitment to the rule of law, fairness, and equality cannot be measured by how we treat the rich, the powerful, the privileged, and the respected among us. The true measure of our character is how we treat the poor, the disfavored, the accused, the incarcerated, and the condemned. We are all implicated when we allow other people to be mistreated. An absence of compassion can corrupt the decency of a community, a state, a nation, and I'll inject a church. Fear and anger can make us vindictive and abusive, unjust and fair, until we all suffer from the absence of mercy and we condemn ourselves as much as we victimize others. The closer we get to mass incarceration and extreme levels of punishment, the more I believe it's necessary to recognize that we all need mercy, we all need justice, and perhaps we all need some measure of unmerited grace. I thought that was very well put. And that's what he went into his, that's what drove him to do what he did, is he's seen the unfairness, he's seen the destitute, the people that were down that could do nothing about it, and he had compassion and he was active. That is exactly what Christ is talking about here. This beatitude is directly linked to the first one. Blessed are the poor in spirit. When we realize our hopelessness apart from the grace and mercy of God, and we become recipients of his mercy and come to understand that only because of God's attribute of mercy that we are not consumed. Like it says in Lamentations 22, it is of the Lord's mercies that we are not consumed because his compassions fail not. That is mercy. That's God's mercy to us. And when we experience that through brokenness and selflessness and we come the bottom rung and we can't get any lower and we experience that mercy, it instills in us a compassion for people in the same place. Mercy, the most perfect description of it is John 3:16. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in him should... For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in him should not perish but have everlasting life. The love of God drove him to send Christ to us and pay the ultimate price for our redemption. The only reason any of us woke up this morning and are here today is because of the mercy of our God. God does not have to take our life. All he has to do is withhold it. We take for granted, we wake up and our heart is beating and our breath is coming. We don't even have to think about it. But it is of the mercy of God that we are here. Christ is saying here that the place of blessing is when the mercy we have received and are receiving every day flows from us to the needy and the broken and the sick and the fallen humanity all around us. In Matthew chapter 10, I'd like to look at a couple verses there. It's a couple pages over. Matthew 10, 7 and 8 says, "And as you go, preach, saying, the kingdom is at hand. Heal the sick, cleanse the lepers, raise the dead, cast out devils. Freely ye have received, freely give." That's speaking of mercy. All what he commanded his disciples to do there is just go out and show mercy that had been extended to them. Freely ye have received, freely give. Mercy is ministry to the miserable. Mercy is different than grace, and I can't go into all that, but mercy is an action. Mercy is something we do. It's not just something we feel. It's not just something we think about. When we see the miserable, it is driven by a sense of compassion and love. And then I'd like to read Psalm chapter 40. God held back his justice to us and extended mercy. And we'll see that as we go down through there. Here's Psalm chapter 40. "I waited patiently for the Lord, and he inclined unto me and heard my cry. He brought me up also out of an horrible pit, out of the miry clay, and set my feet upon a rock and established my going. He hath put a new song in my mouth, even praise unto our God. Many shall see it and fear and shall trust in the Lord. Blessed is that man that maketh the Lord his trust and respecteth not the proud, nor such as turn aside to lies. Many, O Lord my God, are they wonderful works which thou hast done, and thy thoughts which are to usward. They cannot be reckoned up in order unto thee. If I would declare and speak of them, they are more than can be numbered. Sacrifice and offering thou didst not desire. Mine ears have thou opened. Burnt offering and sin offering hast thou not required. Then said I, Lo, I come in the volume of the book, it is written. I delight to do thy will, O my God. Thy law is within my heart. I have preached righteousness in the great congregation. Lo, I have not refrained my lips, O Lord, thou knowest. I have not hid thy righteousness within my heart. I have declared thy faithfulness and thy salvation. I have not concealed thy loving kindness and thy truth from the great congregation. Withhold not thou thy tender mercies from me, O Lord. Let thy loving kindness and thy truth continually preserve me. For innumerable evils have compassed me about. Mine iniquities have taken hold upon me, so that I am not able to look up. They are more than the hairs of mine head, therefore my heart faileth me. Be pleased, O Lord, to deliver me. O Lord, make haste to help me. Let them be ashamed and confounded together that seek after my soul to destroy it. Let them be driven backward and put to shame that wish me evil. Let them be desolate for a reward of their shame that say unto me, Aha, aha. Let all those that seek thee rejoice and be glad in thee. Let such as love thy salvation say continually, The Lord be magnified. I am poor and needy, yet the Lord thinketh upon me. Thou art my help and my deliverer. Make no tarrying, O my God. This is a psalm of David, and he understood mercy in the truest form. And it's interesting going down through here. He begged for mercy, but he also begged for justice. And he understood, with all that he had been through, the mercy that God actually had. There was an inflow and an outflow. And that's what Christ is telling us here in Matthew chapter 5, verse 7. That when we experience mercy, we don't take it in and just bottle it up. There needs to be a release. There needs to be an outflow. That is part of the light. That is part of the character of Christ that shines forth from our lives. Many shall see it and fear and shall trust in the Lord. The amount of mercy we extend to our fellow men is a direct indication of our spiritual life. This isn't something we can just think it would be nice to have and just go through life and largely not have much to do with it. It's not an option. It's easier to receive mercy, but to be judgmental. If we're honest, we tend to be hard or judgmental with others, but super merciful with ourselves. That's what I see in my own life. Christ says, blessed or happy are the merciful, and that is letting it flow through to our fellow men around us. Mercy will not always be reciprocated. We give it and don't expect to get it back. Because the people that require mercy oftentimes are not in the position to even give it back. Proverbs 11:17 says, The merciful man doeth good to his own soul, but he that is cruel or judgmental troubleth his own flesh. Those kind of people are just tough to be around. The cruel and the judgmental people. They're miserable. They need help. Proverbs 12:10. A righteous man regardeth the life of his beast, but the tender mercies of the wicked are cruel. Even our animals that we take care of need to have mercy extended to them. They need to be well taken care of, our livestock. So what does a merciful person look like? And sometimes you get a clearer picture when we put it up against what it is not, or its opposite. And I would like to do that a little bit here this morning and look at some of the hindrances to merciful living. And we'll go down through here, and in the first clue is in verse 6 of Psalm 40 that we read. It says, "Sacrifice and offering thou didst not desire. Mine ears hast thou opened. Burnt offering and sin offerings hast thou not required." I'd like you to just hold that thought, and then let's go back over to Matthew. Matthew chapter 9. Matthew chapter 9, verse 10. "And when the Pharisees saw it, they said unto his disciples, Why eateth your master with publicans and sinners?" Christ had gone in and there was publicans and sinners came in, and he was in there eating with them, and they couldn't stand it. And they asked him what was going on. But when Jesus heard that, he said unto them, "They that be whole need not a physician, but they that are sick. But go ye and learn what that meaneth. I will have mercy and not sacrifice. I am not come to call the righteous, but the sinners to repentance." And then I'd like to turn over to the 23rd chapter of Matthew. Matthew 23, verse 23 and 24. "Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites! For ye pay tithe of mint and anise and cumin, and have omitted the weightier matters of the law, judgment, mercy, and faith. These ought ye to have done, and not to leave the other undone. Ye blind guides which strain at a gnat and swallow a camel." See what Christ is saying here. Where should our focus be? It's right to sacrifice. That's not what he's saying. But it's not right to sacrifice instead of mercy. It does not trump mercy, ever. And that's what he is saying here. The Jews were all caught up in the gnats or in the religious exercises and their ceremonial things that they were doing, and they were all caught up in that, and they had a big issue with Christ going in and sitting with and eating with the offcast and the people that actually needed help. They were up here and they would never lower themselves to go there. But Christ calls that the weightier matters: judgment, mercy, and faith. Christ used a picture of gnats and camels. It's interesting. He was saying that the opposite of mercy was their religious, sacred, ceremonial practices that they valued so highly, but were a hindrance to the things that actually mattered. He said he desires mercy and not sacrifice, or instead of sacrifice. The point is that Christ is calling us to be alive spiritually and actively compassionate or merciful to the needs around us first before our formal religious practices. He says, "These you ought to have done and not to left the other undone." There is value. We need to do them both, but let's keep our priorities right. The truly merciful person does not allow the trivial things of life or the gnats, whether religious or secular, to stand in the way of an act of mercy. It doesn't matter if you're on the way to church. It doesn't matter if you're on the way to work. It doesn't matter where you're at. The spiritual person that has received and experienced mercy, when he sees a need or someone in desperate need of help, will stop and help. And for another illustration, I'd like to turn to the familiar story in Luke chapter 10. It's the story of the Good Samaritan. Luke chapter 10, 25 to 37, we'll read that. And behold, a certain lawyer stood up and tempted him, saying, Master, what shall I do to inherit eternal life? And he said unto them, What is written in the law? How readest thou? And he answering said, Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, and with all thy strength, and with all thy mind, and thy neighbor as thyself. And he said unto him, Thou hast answered right, this do, and thou shalt live. But he, willing to justify himself, said unto Jesus, And who is my neighbor? And Jesus answering said, A certain man went down from Jerusalem to Jericho, and fell among thieves, which stripped him of his raiment, and wounded him, and departed, leaving him half dead. And by chance there came down a certain priest that way, and when he saw him, he passed by on the other side. And likewise a Levite, when he was at the place, came and looked on him, and passed by on the other side. But a certain Samaritan, as he journeyed, came where he was, and when he saw him, he had compassion on him, and went to him, and bound up his wounds, pouring in oil and wine, and set him on his own beast, and brought him to an inn, and took care of him. And on the morrow, when he departed, he took out 2 pence, and he gave them to the host, and said unto him, Take care of him, and whatsoever thou spendest more, when I come again, I will repay thee. Which now of these three thinkest thou was neighbor unto him that fell among thieves? And he said, He that showed mercy on him. Then said Jesus unto him, Go, and do thou likewise. There's a lot in here, and Christ, this lawyer came to Christ, and there was something bothering him. He had some questions, but he was also trying to corner him. He had a ill intent. He was tempting Christ with a question. And like Christ did, he came up with a story, and he let the lawyer answer the question himself. The lawyer wondered what he needed to do to receive mercy and judgment or inherit eternal life. At the end, what would he have to do to be saved? And he knew all the pat answers. He knew exactly what to say. He knew the law. He knew everything, and probably looked like he was doing it. But he only wanted to love, and he only wanted to help only who he had to. He was looking for a loophole. He wanted to get by with just the minimum. And so Christ answered with this parable. And I'd like to just go down through here. And if we think of it, Jerusalem and to Jericho, and I'm sure you've heard it before, but Jerusalem, it was a rough, dangerous, windy road from Jerusalem to Jericho. It went down. Jericho was on the banks of the Dead Sea. And so going from Jerusalem to Jericho were these travelers, and the one was taken down and beat up and robbed and almost dead and then left there to die. And Christ used the people he used for a reason in this story, because this lawyer very well could have been a priest or a Levite. He said, first the priest came by. The priests were the highly religious people of the day. They were the teachers that performed all the rituals and all the sacrifices. And he come walking along there, and he saw this man, and it says he just passed by and went on the other side. He hit the shoulder and just kept going. He had things to do. He had probably a lot of really good things to do down in Jericho. And he kept going. And then the Levite came by. And these were, the Levite was the keepers of the law. They were all about rules and regulations. And it was law, and that's what they were looking after. And he came and looked. It said he looked, so he must have stopped and looked and passed the other side and kept going. And these men probably went, and they probably thought back to that poor guy laying back there and almost dead. And like any human, you'd struggle with some guilt and you'd try to justify why you kept going and all that stuff, like we've probably done before. But they kept going. They never helped. And then he uses the Samaritan and these mongrel half-breed look down upon people. This guy coming down here on his donkey or whatever he was riding, his horse, and he sees this man and he stops and he looks down and he goes over there, sees what's going on, and he gets down and he helps the man. It says he bound up his wounds, pouring in oil and wine, and set him on his own beast and brought him to an inn and took care of him. You think the Samaritan never had places to go and people to see and things to do? I'm sure he did. That wasn't a road that you just went on just for a cruise. That was a road you were intentional about going somewhere and you had things to do. But he totally stopped his program. And he wasn't even in the picture anymore. It was all about this poor man that was laying along the edge of the road. And very possibly that was a Jew. Because of where he was coming from, they said that was probably a Jew which would have looked down on the Samaritan. It could have been someone that had treated him wrong already. And that's why Christ used these two people for this demonstration. It says he took him and he took him back to the inn and he stayed with him. He took care of him. And then he paid the price for the room and he promised to come back and pay whatever was left. And there's a lot going on there. I don't have time to go into it much more, but it's a lesson for us. That Samaritan was a picture of Christ. Christ came on the scene. He was despised and rejected of men. It says, a man of sorrows and acquainted with grief. And he, all through his life and through his death, it was mercy all the way through. People begged him for mercy. Have mercy on me. Heal my eyes, my hand, my tongue, my whatever issue they had, they begged for mercy, and Christ extended that to them. That's what he came to do. The oil represents the Holy Spirit. The wine represents Christ's blood and its cleansing power. Christ seen us and was moved to compassion, moved to action through his love for us, and did not stop until every detail was looked after. What's interesting about this story is the Samaritan, he came prepared. He came, he obviously had oil and wine. He had a beast, and he used everything he had to restore that man to health again, even though he was quite possibly looked at as viewed as an enemy. It comes pretty close to home. Where are we at in that picture? Put yourself in there. Where would you be? In religion, there seems to be, and we talked about the balance this morning in our Sunday school, but the left and the right, and there's a pull to the left and a pull to the right, and there's the path to be on. And Christ is saying, don't get caught up in the gnats. The gnats of all the things we do, religiously or secularly or however. But if we refuse to extend mercy when we have an opportunity to extend mercy, we're going to be called to account for that. And there's a, we can tend to put so much emphasis on the things we do and why we do them and put a lot of energy there. And then there's a pull to shun maybe what we left behind and try and, there's a lot of energy put into that. But in the energy that is put into both of them, there is no energy put into what we should be putting it into. And that's what I would like to call us to. That's what where we need to be at. We need to be known as a personally and collectively as merciful people. And there are many ways to do that. Christ came and exemplified mercy to everyone, and when he walked this earth, and when the very people that he showed mercy to nailed him to the cross and shed his blood, that is where mercy and justice met. And justice was satisfied. We sing that song at Calvary, "Mercy there was great, and grace was free. Pardon there was multiplied to me. There my burdened soul found liberty at Calvary." That is the mercy we experienced, and that is the mercy we are expected to extend to our fellow man. Helping the miserable, friend or foe, it's a requirement. If we, in turn, want to obtain that mercy in the end, Christ says, "Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy." I'd like to look at a couple verses in James in closing. James chapter 2. James chapter 2, verse 10, and we'll read down to verse 17. "For whosoever shall keep the whole law and yet offend in one point, he is guilty of all. For he that said, 'Do not commit adultery,' said also, 'Do not kill.' Now if thou commit no adultery, yet if thou kill, thou art become a transgressor of the law. So speak ye, and so do as they that shall be judged by the law of liberty. For he shall have judgment without mercy that hath showed no mercy, and mercy rejoiceth against judgment. What doth it profit, my brethren, though a man say he hath faith and have not works, can faith save him? If a brother or sister be naked and destitute of daily food, and one of you say unto them, 'Depart in peace, be warmed and filled,' notwithstanding ye give them not those things which are needful to the body, what doth it profit? Even so faith, if it hath not works, is dead, being alone." Verse 13. "He shall have judgment without mercy that hath shown no mercy." I can't imagine. That is not a place where anybody would want to be. Judgment without mercy. We see how important it is, an imperative that we extend mercy to those around us. It says, "And mercy rejoiceth against judgment." Mercy is greater than judgment. God is a God of love, a God of compassion, and he wants everybody to make it. That's his attribute of mercy, that why he sent Christ for us. John MacArthur said, "Mercy is more than forgiveness. It includes forgiveness. Forgiveness is very much a part of it, but it's more than forgiveness. It is less than love. It is motivated by love, different than grace, and one with justice." Justice and mercy are together. They cannot be separated. It can't have one without the other. One more verse in James chapter 1, verse 27. "Pure religion and undefiled before God and the Father is this: to visit the fatherless and the widows in their affliction, and to keep himself unspotted from the world. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy." God bless.